It has been a long week. I say that every week. We talked about the Atlanta mayoral race, homeless kids cheating at work. So as we do every Friday, let's take a breath, right? Let's gather a group of smart people with us and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
Students had mixed feelings about the Greek suspension on Monday. The university president felt it appropriate in light of Friday's death.
Everyone who signed up for the promotion was given a small portion of the land. That way, together, they owned it. The government would have to take them to court and fight in order to put up the wall.
I hope to make a positive impact. I don't know what it means to be complicit.
Joining us in the break room, former NPR correspondent and journalist Kathy Lohr, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, Republican strategist Julianne Thompson, and special guest Roy Wood Jr.,
Hello.
Correspondent for The Daily Show on Comedy Central. He's in Atlanta this weekend for a series of stand-up performances. Welcome, everybody. Congratulations
Good morning.
It to Friday. All right. Look, most people have at some point picked up their cell phone while they were driving. But Georgia state lawmakers want everyone to cut it out. A bill is being drafted to make it very expensive if you have your cell phone in your hand. The sponsor says our current texting law is ineffective, the penalties aren't tough enough, and there are too many loopholes. This new bill would forbid touching your phone. So do we think tough penalties would make people stop?
There's dead silence. Well, the other penalties didn't do anything.
I remember doing stories, and
they haven't done much in other states. Yeah. I think $1,000 and 4 points off your driver's license might make me think.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't know the penalty was going to go up to that. I put my phone in the trunk.
I would have to put my phone in the trunk.
Yeah, but legit.
You mean it's too tempting to pick it up?
Yeah, it's 100% too tempting. You're sitting at a red light. What else am I gonna do? Wait for the light to turn green? Boring. I think what will happen is that as automobile companies, like, they're starting to work with the heads-up displays that pop up in the windshield or whatever. That's just where all of your texting is. Like, everything is going to go on your windshield, and I'm just going to be driving and scrolling through Instagram with eyes still
mine,
on
the road.
You can't
read the text. You can only hear it. Hector, you don't use your cell phone in your car, right?
All the time.
You do use it in the phone.
All the time, but hands-free.
Okay.
Hands-free. I mean, I would charge even more money.
More than $1,000.
Yeah, I would charge more. I mean, I would force everybody to go hands-free. The problem is, the car companies are beginning to get rated in terms of how distracting their systems are. So chances are you're going to be purchasing a brand that is highly rated for being less distracting than a brand that is very distracting. Like Mercedes and Volvo, everybody's touching their screens, you know?
Yeah.
So,
What about you, Julianne?
Yeah, it's extremely tempting. Of course, I've done it before. But I think the statistics are really clear that something has to be done about it.
Yeah, it's really dangerous.
And this bill does have the exception for hands-free devices. And so I think it's fair.
All right.
We just have to figure out where the middle ground is. I don't think it's fair that I can't touch my phone.
You can touch it, but just not in the car.
You know, I don't think it's fair that you can't touch it because I have hands-free also. But there are times when you need it, especially if you're using a map or doing something, you might want to change the direction.
Well, they want you to pull over.
Yeah,
that.
Right.
What
All
about
right.
the cop
like
that pulls
gonna,
me over?
Like, that's going to happen.
He's got a full laptop open. You're cruising the internet.
I guess it's true right now that there's no such thing as truly and completely hands-free.
That's true.
Because there's always something that you have to touch.
Yeah,
that
could be a point.
All right. So let's talk about something else. The F word, shall we? A four-letter word that has grown quite a bit in popularity.
Oh, fudge.
Only I didn't say fudge. I said the word, the big one, the queen mother of dirty words, the F-dash-dash-dash word.
What did you say?
It is a different time from when Christmas Story was written. Now the Canadian Broadcasting Standards Council says it's okay to use the F word on radio stations. The council ruled the word is so common at this point that it's no longer shocking or offensive anymore. Should we make the same rule change in the U.S.?
Absolutely. We're already there. I mean,
don't say it.
No, well, there are many worse words, and people are already using it. And with the, you know, the vocabulary our current president has, this beautiful vocabulary.
He's not the only one with a bad vocabulary.
Yeah, I know, but he's a role model. He's a key role model, right? So, I mean, we should all be saying it. Shouldn't be a problem.
We're getting there for sure. I mean, if you look at broadcasting standards here in America, the S word is already on cable earlier than 9 p.m. I think it's 9 p.m. I think it's 9 p.m. or later. You can say that. And I only know this because I have to argue with the lawyers at Comedy Central about cursing in some of the segments.
Because you're not on HBO.
And after midnight, F-bombs are completely fine on basic cable on certain channels. Yeah, so we're slowly, keep in mind, America was a country where in the 50s, a man and a woman didn't sleep in the same bed during a television sitcom. Now, compare that to some of the scenes you have in a television show now. It ain't the 50s no more.
That is
so
true.
So we'll get there, but just, you know, Canada's always ahead of the curve.
I think it's a balance. I mean, it's a balance that's very difficult to get to try to have some sort of balance between freedom and liberty and between what individuals find to be decent. Perhaps keeping liberty with maybe combining it with a system, like a rating system similar to what we have for movies.
Right, so you can protect
your kids, you mean? So you can protect your kids. You're not telling people that they can't do it, but at least when you pull it up on the screen for your car or whatever, you can see. Exactly.
Kathy?
I want to know why Canada basically said that it's only okay in French language stations.
Let's not say it in French either. This is public radio. We can't afford the FCC fine.
Right. I just think it's much more common, and it's more thought of as just a simple word, although I don't see American broadcasters using it in the near future without consequences.
Well, this much. It'd make the local news a lot more interesting. They could say that word.
That's true. They're saying it in their heads.
They bleep it.
Let's consider another word, complicit. We have a couple minutes to talk about this. Dictionary.com chose complicit as the word of the year. Online searches for this word are up three times as much, including during the Saturday Night Live sketch for complicit, which is a fake perfume ad poking fun at Ivanka Trump.
She's Ivanka. And a woman like her deserves a fragrance all her own. A scent made just for her. Because she's beautiful. She's powerful. She's complicit.
Okay, so if not complicit, what would be your word of the year? Kathy?
I have to go first. Narcissistic.
Interesting.
Ooh, that's thoughtful.
Julianne,
I'm still working on
it. You have a different word of the year?
I do. It would be covfefe.
That's not a real word.
That's not a real word.
Hector?
Resist.
Resist. Yeah. Okay. And Roy?
Russia.
There's all a common theme here.
I should mention that the actual definition of complicit, by the way, if you're confused, as Ivanka Trump said that she was, it's choosing to be involved in an illegal or questionable act, especially when you do that with other people. That is what complicit means. So, I mean, we have about a minute left. So, Kathy, you want to explain why that would be your word of the year?
Why?
Narcissistic?
Oh, my God.
For obvious reasons.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to move on. Julianne.
Who else could come up with a word that Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood would have an entire segment on the CMA Awards for?
That's true.
Fair enough. Hector?
Some people don't think to understand what it means to resist.
What do you mean?
That there are multiple ways of doing it. So to that extent, I would appreciate, you know, a more effective way of practicing it.
Huh, that's interesting. And Roy, you say Russia.
I like Russia because you can just blame Russia for anything that goes wrong. Like, it's like the ultimate excuse for anything. I thought we was going out. You didn't call me. Hey, baby, you know the Russians. You know,
the
Russians got
phone.
A whole, I didn't get your text message, baby, them Russians. Sir, you're 2 months late on your bill. When can we expect pay? Listen, them Russians. Them Russians tied up my bank account. I can't even.
All right. We have
That's
a
beautiful.
couple. nomination. That's actually, I'm going to
just blame
that.
It on Russia. Anything going wrong in your life, just the Russians.
Hey, that's not a bad one.
Maggie on text says, how about collude? And Sarah Eines, one, says, word of the year should be unprecedented. You can let us know what your nominations are. You know how to reach us. It's Friday. We're hanging out in the break room. Just ahead, we're going to talk about an unconventional protest over the border wall and why Atlantans are not as active as people in most other cities. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. We are having coffee and conversation in the break room, as we do every Friday. My guests today are Hector Fernandez of Georgia State University. Sorry about that, Hector. Julianne Thompson, a Republican strategist. Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent and journalist. And Roy Wood Jr., correspondent for The Daily Show on Comedy Central and in Atlanta for a series of stand-up performances. All right. We're all sitting. We have to sit. But it turns out that you may want to work out, maybe not exactly the way, say, Richard Simmons does it.
Legs should be shoulders width apart, shoulders relaxed, buns tucked under, neck is relaxed and nice and long. You should feel lifted. Think up.
All right. Well, Richard actually was on to something. Exercise, it turns out, improves your life, your health, your happiness. A Harvard report says exercise has more benefits than we ever thought before. But listen, Atlanta exercises almost less than any other city. So why don't we exercise?
It's not just Atlanta. It's a lot of the South, actually, that has the most problem with obesity and other issues.
But that's the biscuits and gravy.
It is biscuits and gravy, and it's every vegetable is fried.
Yes, that's true. Okay, Julianne?
I mean, I have to admit that I've been lazy over the past couple of months, but I did start a workout routine again at Orange Theory, and it's kicking my butt. But exercise totally changes everything in my life. When I'm not exercising, I'm not as disciplined. I'm not as prepared for things. And honestly, even my spirituality improves when I start exercising. So I think that there's something to the fact that it does change your brain chemistry.
Yeah, it makes you feel better, which makes you wonder why people don't do it. Hector, you exercise.
Yeah, religiously. It's the only thing religious in my life, actually. I think it's the lifestyle. I think it's too much time it's spent in the car, too much time spent at the office, sitting in front of the computer, not enough hedonism.
Enough hedonism.
In the culture. Yeah, well, that's the stuff, the healthy side of New Orleans, you know. They engage in hedonism. So.
Roy, do you exercise?
Like every other month, like I do it for a couple weeks and I go, this hurts. Why would I keep doing something that hurts?
Because it makes you so healthy.
I know, but it hurts. You know what doesn't hurt? Fried food. Feels good going down. Plus the game is rigged. Let's just be real about obesity in this country. There's a spot. I have a picture of it. I'll dig and find it and give it to you to post. There's a Chick-fil-A in the same parking lot as a 24-hour fitness. You can't do that to me. You can't walk me out the gym and then immediately hit me with the wonderful scents and smells of Chick-fil-A right across the parking lot. Oh, that's how they get us.
That's fair enough. All right.
As soon as you try to work out, like with the holidays, you know what they do? You work out during the holidays, and then you feel bad about it. So in January, you get a gym membership, and then in February, the McRib is back. It's the game is rigged.
That's fair enough. All right. We would love to hear from you out there. You know how to reach us. You can call us at 404-500-9457 or just find us on social media. Do you exercise? And if it makes you feel good, why aren't you doing it? All right. So let's move on to a story out of Missouri. A 14-year-old girl there was out hunting with her father. Excuse me.
Whoops. All right. Whoops.
It's an honest slip there. She was on a hunting trip with her dad, and she shot what she thought was a deer. It was not. It was an elk, and it was an elk that was protected. The wildlife code forbids killing those elks. Her parents hope that conservation officials are going to let her keep the elk anyway. So there's this issue.
Wait, what?
Yeah. There's this issue of should she be allowed to keep the elk. And then the other thing that bothers me is there's this pretty sizable public media backlash of people who want to see the girl punished. So, Julianne, let's start with you on this. What do you make of all this?
Well, first of all, I think that the family and other hunters need some education with regard to conservation and what's a protected species and what is not. Secondly, I think that those who are shaming a child should be ashamed of themselves. I mean, you know, pick on the parents if you want to. Leave the kid alone. But as far as keeping the elk, no. She shouldn't be able to keep the elk.
No.
No.
Hector, should
you
keep the
elk? No. The elk, it's going to rot at home. I mean, even if she does something with it. I mean, she should be sent to the local zoo to learn to appreciate and respect animal life. The father, on the other hand, should be sent to counseling sessions so that, you know, on proper parenting, so that he learns a thing or two. But the people who are shaming her, they're just mean.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, there's no reason.
I don't think you shame a 14-year-old and say, you know, lock her away. I think the parents, if anything, I think you're correct, Hector. And I think what I understand is that the Missouri Conservation Department said they will not return any part of the animal,
right,
the skin or whatever, to the family. That is the weird part of this, that they still wanted to keep that, even with all of
this
backlash.
Shows a lack of sincerity in the mistake by the father.
Yeah.
You protect the
he
child.
He just said he wants to pay the fine. That's
yeah,
what he
that's fine. Pay the fine. Know. Take her. I don't know how you hunt. I've never hunted when I was a child. But I don't know if she has like a teen learner's permit. Whatever allows her to go out and hunt. Take that away. Year or two. Then you know, go stare at elk and stare at deer and stare at antelope and learn the difference between all of them. So that the next time you're out there, you know what the hell you're looking at down scope.
Yeah, that's exactly what Julianne is saying. More education.
Yeah, just learn.
Elks are quite large. Okay, let's move south to Florida. Florida State University has now suspended all activities for all Greek organizations. That's because a 20-year-old fraternity pledge died at one of the parties. Here is a bit of a CBS News story about it.
Students had mixed feelings about the Greek suspension on Monday.
It really wasn't the fault of all the other fraternities.
While some thought the action was too drastic, the university president felt it appropriate in light of Friday's death.
We wish we could have saved this individual. Sometimes an accident, nothing we could do about that. But this is something we've got to address.
FSU is actually the third university to take this step. So, look, this isn't the only issue we've had in recent years with fraternities and sororities. Can we make them safer, or are they sort of a relic of the past?
Very much a relic of the past. They need to go the way of the dodo. There's no positive byproduct of Greek life that you cannot get nowadays without Greek life, especially in the age of social media and crowdfunding. And besides, the big point is, personally, I cringe at the thought of anything that hints at a herd mentality. And Greek life reeks of a herd mentality.
I think, but if we do that, then I would make the argument that we could get rid of college athletics, because there's a lot of hazing culture that happens within football, baseball, even lacrosse.
Wait,
has
you're,
some weird...
You're a Southerner suggesting getting rid of college football?
I'm saying if it's their hazing and they don't know how to behave, then we have to shut down all cultures within college life that don't know how to behave.
Well, a few years ago, the Florida A&M marching band had
correct.
A hazing incident.
And they shut the band down.
They
band
did for 2 years.
For two whole years. Yeah. I'm a graduate of Florida A&M. And that whole thing, to me, with Greek culture, I think it's unfortunate. First of all, I think it's too heavy-handed. If you're going to, everybody stop, nobody do this, and we won't have Greeks ever again, I think is a bit of a stretch. I think it's an overcorrection, because I do think with regards to a lot of Greek fraternities, and I can't speak to predominantly white Greek fraternities, but I know predominantly black fraternities who have also had their issues with hazings and hazing death. Kappa Alpha Psi at Florida A&M, there was a gentleman that, it was a whole huge case,
yeah.
Two guys went to jail over it. But a lot of fraternities do give back to their communities. A lot of fraternities do good things. There is some good that comes of these groups. I don't know how you stop.
But you can do that without a fraternity. And fraternities are not essential to college life. Sports are key to college life. But Greek influence, you know, in many aspects nowadays, it's not justifiable. There are more effective ways to accomplish in a college and a university what a fraternity or sorority does without them.
Wait, let me bring Julianne in there. We haven't heard from you yet.
Okay, now I agree with everything that Roy said. There's not a whole lot for me to add to that, except that with regard to this particular case in Florida State, there's a little bit more to the story, given the fact that the administration has been wanting a lot of the land surrounding the university that is owned by the sororities and fraternities and their houses. So, I mean, if they shut them down and eventually cause them to not be able to ever be active again, they can seize those lands under a grandfathered price.
I think they have to do something because there's so much alcohol on campus and there's so much unsupervised. There's been too many incidents, and
our own UGA has had to crack down on partying. We're going to just for a moment, let me remind everyone, we're hanging out in the break room. With us is Roy Wood Jr., correspondent for The Daily Show, Republican strategist Julianne Thompson, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, and Kathy Lohr, a former NPR correspondent. All right. There have been a number of protests. Every president is protested in one way or another, but there's been a rise in protest groups under President Trump. And one company, Cards Against Humanity, is taking an unconventional approach to protest.
Cards Against Humanity purchased acres of land on the U.S.-Mexico border and didn't build a wall on it. They retained a law firm to fight the United States government and prevent them from ever building the wall.
So basically, you can buy these packs of cards, which sold out within, I think, a couple hours, which gives you ownership of a tiny portion of land along the border. They have hired a slew of lawyers to make it as difficult as possible for the government to express eminent domain. And my question is, what kind of protest do you prefer? Because this involves buying something, but usually it's a boycott, right? Usually a protest is not buying something. So what do you think is better?
I think all protest is disruption. And I think that is, to me, the key element of any protest that's effective or annoying. I think whether it's lying down in the freeway or whether it's taking a knee or whether it's whether it's financial boycotts, you're fiscally disrupting someone. So I think it to me, it's easy. If I could just buy something and be like, yeah, I protest it. That way I don't have to go and stand around. I don't know if you've ever been to a protest, but you need a lot of fluids. It's hot. It's a long day. I've been to a lot of them. So if you go, just send you money? All right, cool. I'll do that. And now I'm a property owner.
That's right.
I've always believed that effective protests, usually the change that results comes from money lost. There's money gained here Cards Against Humanity. This isn't something where you're buying into a protest. They're actually making money here. So, I believe that boycotts are more effective. Absolutely.
I'm going to say the opposite. But I also think that I liked the idea of doing something proactive. And I don't remember who said this, but somebody said, if you ask me to advocate against something, I'll say no. But if you ask me to protest for peace, I'll say yes. And I think I would also want to buy that deck. So I have something, and it would be a collector's item. You know?
Interesting. It's sold
out.
Can't get
any. I know.
I'm with Kathy. I mean, this is active, nonviolent form of protest. And it's using the tools of capitalism against bigotry. It's the sort of language that the system understands. So I support it 100%.
Interesting. All right, we have one last thing to talk about. This is going to be our lightning round here, although not so lightning. We've got like 3 minutes. There's another construction project here in Atlanta going on, but it probably shouldn't block the roads. It's a 9-foot statue of boxer Evander Holyfield. It will go up in front of Atlanta's Flatiron Building. It cost $90,000. It's part of the city's new multi-million-dollar investment in public art. So here's the question. If you could spend $90,000 to put up a statue of somebody, who would it be?
First, I have a question about the Evander Holyfield statue.
Yeah.
Two full ears?
Partial. I am not answering that, sir.
I need to talk to the designer.
Full scale.
That's just not
it's
nice.
It's a fair question.
It is.
Kathy, do you want to bring some rationale to this?
Okay, I was going to say Eleanor Roosevelt because we don't have one here and for her human rights work. But they have statues of her in Washington, New York, whatever.
They do.
So I'm going to say J.K. Rowling for her...
A Brit!
Yeah. For her work to get kids interested in reading, plus I love the Harry Potter books.
You do. Okay, so.
All right.
The American Soldier, first and foremost. And also, I would put
female
up...
Female or male?
Both. And...
What race?
Bronze.
There you go. And I would also feature canine soldiers as well.
Ooh.
Because I think that... They are far overlooked. They're left sometimes abroad when they're finished with, and that would also be a good way to promote more pet adoptions and saving those lives as well after they've given so much to save our soldiers' lives.
There's a really nice memorial in Guam to military dogs that everyone, if you ever get a chance to get out that way.
Coming off the headlines just this morning, the military is going to put down two dog soldiers that served in Afghanistan.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, no. Hector, on that sad note, who would you build a statue to?
A homeless Atlantan, preferably an African-American male like the ones I see each time I walk through campus in downtown Atlanta. That's what I would have.
Okay, you're going to make people pay attention?
That should shame the local government enough.
Okay, Roy?
I'm going to go with Joe Rogers, who is co-founder of Waffle House, which is a Georgia institution.
It is.
And it's expanded all over the South. And I don't think Joe knows how many people he's fed at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night after last call. And the man is a hero, and he's given us all a place to sober up before we text something stupid to an ex-girlfriend.
That's an honest.
He is a hero. He's modest. I don't even think his picture's up in the restaurant. This is a low-key dude who deserves some acclaim.
Recognition.
And you would put that right in the middle of downtown Atlanta, I assume.
Yeah, but you could only go to it at night. Like, you have to.
Would you bring food offerings?
Yeah.
Waffles. Yeah. Waffles. Belgian waffles.
It's the hash browns that you use. Yeah. It's the hash browns.
And it'll be little, like, way too tight booths right next to it where you can sit.
All right. We are out of time. I want to say thank you to all my guests, Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr, Republican strategist Julianne Thompson, and a special thanks to Roy Wood Jr., correspondent for The Daily Show, and he's in Atlanta this week for a series of stand-up performances at the Punchline Comedy Club. You can get more details on that at our website. For today and the week, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great weekend.